This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to talk about Voyager. For this episode, my guest is Guy English. So Guy is based in Montreal. He's a longtime game and app developer, a podcaster, man of many talents, I know, and organizer of the Singleton Conference, which for me is like the conference I never got to. But I appreciated it while you all were doing it. So, hey, Guy.
We'll do another one just for you.
Okay. That'll be great. I look forward to it. Hey, so, Guy, is there anything else that I left out that you'd like to let listeners know about yourself?
I don't think so. That's pretty good. Oh, on this very network, I do a very silly superhero show with my friends Dan Warren and John Maltz called Biff.
Oh, yeah. It's like a new incarnation of a podcast, right?
Yeah, we used to, as part of the TV podcast, which is great. Everybody should go check that out. We would recap Arrow, which is, you know, a superhero show about a guy who shoots arrows at people. And it was kind of silly. And it basically just evolved into cracking a lot of jokes and having a good time while recapping the episode. Arrow's coming to an end next season.
Is it really?
Season. Oh. Yeah. Well, it's been like 7 years. It'll be seven and a half. So it's enough. It needs to end sometime. I'm kind of glad it's wrapping up now. But in light of that, we spun off and we started up a new podcast, basically called Biff, where we just cover superhero shows in general. And there's a lot of superhero shows.
Oh, yes, there is.
There's like a lot of content right now. It's pretty crazy. But, we try to do it with humor and a laugh. And right now we're covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, that's a cool show. Yeah. Both Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've watched like the first three, maybe four seasons of. But eventually I just ran out of steam with
I'll tell you one thing about Arrow. You've probably seen the best two seasons. Season one and two are really good. Season three gets pretty weak. It's the worst one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've done good. You don't need to go back.
All right. Good. Thank you for saving me time. In fact, I think that's a very important service we podcasters provide, is helping people figure out where to spend their valuable TV watching time.
Speaking of which, your Voyager guide. I really, really loved your Voyager guide. I started going down the list, and I, to tell you the truth, I gave up and I just started watching the whole thing. So I watched it from beginning to end. I was like, you know what? Like, I'll just watch it all.
You can pick and choose, but eventually, once you get into it, you kind of even want to watch the bad ones to see how bad they are.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of bad Star Trek in my time.
Yeah.
And it's not that I was – I don't know. I mean, once I'd seen a few and I got a taste for the characters and where the show was going, I was like, you know what? What am I doing picking and choosing? I'll just watch the whole thing. I've watched all of Enterprise before. I may as well watch Voyager.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I do think, I have looked at other people's guides for watching Deep Space Nine or the original series or Next Generation. And I think it's helpful, if you're just sort of dipping in and you want to watch some, but you want to watch the better episodes. I don't know. Right. Anyway, like I said, it's a public service and we're proud to offer it here.
Well, here's the thing. Anything that brings people into the Star Trek fold, I think is for the greater good.
Yeah. Yeah, so tell me about Star Trek and Guy. Like, where did you get started?
So I started watching Star Trek way back in, I don't know, must have been the 80s. Like, the CBC used to run it on Sunday mornings, and they would run one or two back-to-back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I would basically curl up on the couch with my younger sister, and we would watch episodes of the original series.
Yeah.
And we saw the same things over and over,
Yeah.
And at that point in technology and life, there was like three stations.
Yes.
And the CBC was kind of the big one. So like, all the kids on the block would also have spent some time on Sunday morning watching Star Trek. Even if they weren't into sci-fi or nerdy in any way, everybody had seen every Star Trek that was available to them because why not? Sunday morning, you may as well watch some, the cartoons are over. That was Saturday, Sunday, whatever. So I really loved it. I loved that show. I love the original series. Yeah. I think for me, that's my series. Like that is the heart of Star Trek for me. Yeah. I think everything sort of derives from that. I mean, just chronologically, that's the case. But like I learned a lot about the way, or informed the way I treat other people and treat power structures and that kind of thing from that show. And it's often over the top morality place, and it's I can't rewatch it that much anymore.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of problems. It's very progressive for its time, but there's a bunch of problems that, you know.
Yeah.
Not great.
I mean, its time was over 50 years ago.
Yeah. Well, so it occurred to me because, I mean, I was on my way home from work today thinking about doing this show, and I was thinking about the original series. And I'm not sure if this thesis holds up, but the Kirk is a womanizer thing.
Yeah.
It's true. And I was trying to remember all of the occasions where that happened. And often the women are being treated poorly by their boss or something, or by some crazy alien that's mm-hmm. controlling their minds or something. And he often pitches freedom to them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where they're like, well, I guess I'm using my freedom to go to bed with you, which is where things go poorly in terms of the thing. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting for the time where, you know, it's the late 60s. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of liberation stuff going on. But I just, that show made interesting choices in so many ways. When we look at them today, now they seem horribly dated and regressive in certain ways, for sure.
Yeah, certain things, definitely.
Yeah.
And then other things, seem very ahead of their time, even today. The first time I was on the podcast Random Trek, my episode that I was assigned was the Gideon, Mark of Gideon, which mm-hmm. is basically about population control.
Yeah.
And and that was one where, like, as you'd say, Kirk is, you know, dealing with a woman who is being oppressed by her culture and is trying to, you know, free her from being used by her people. And he doesn't mind, you know.
Well, yeah.
Cuddling up with her in the meantime.
Yeah, it is. There's two things I like about it. That's like, yeah, he's like preaching you're your own person, you are empowered, you can make your own choices. But he kind of twists it to be like, and you know what? The obvious choice is me, which is like kind of where it falls down. But, you know.
Yeah, but definitely as a kid, you know, I watched it as a kid as well. And that seeing that depiction of a society so overpopulated that they couldn't even sit down, right? Like there's just like rooms full of people standing around in little white suits. And it was a nightmare, you know. It was definitely my first encounter with kind of a, you know, dystopian future. So
and he swoops in and he's like not having it anymore.
Yeah, it's a weird episode. It's not one of the best ones, but
it's not. It's not great.
It definitely is one of the ones that you look at and say they were definitely putting out a message there that was very ahead of its time.
Right, and they were trying, and that's one of the things I love about Star Trek in general is that they will often try.
Yes.
Sometimes they fail, but they're often really trying, and you have to admire that. You know, like it's too easy just to do the same stuff all the time, and these guys. They make an attempt at getting what is usually a pretty consistent message across, or at least there's a broad range of what the Star Trek philosophy is.
I mean,
it's poorly defined. It's, you know, it's fuzzy around the edges, but you generally know what a Starfleet means.
Right? Yeah.
Like they have a principle. They have a set of principles and they operate within the, you know, the strictures of the Federation and Starfleet until they encounter something that matches their principles but goes with it a little bit outside the rules, and then they break the rules because the principles come first, and that's it's interesting. I don't know,
which
captures my imagination.
And I do think, you know, that's one of the things about Voyager that mm-hmm. made it interesting for seven seasons is that they were following the Star Trek you know, the Starfleet principles insofar as they could. But so many situations they had to be challenged by that. And there's a lot of interesting episodes, you know, where that is a key. But yeah, so do you remember when Voyager came out? Did you watch it when it was launched?
So I think it overlaps with DS9 a bit, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. I was watching DS9 pretty religiously. I think I would go over to my friend's house and we'd all watch it as a gang. That and X-Files. Voyager started it's the first season of a Star Trek show, which is always a little bit weaker. And I just never really cottoned onto it. The characters never sunk to me that much. I like Janeway enough. So one of the things that bugged me right off the bat was that and I was excited that they had a woman captain, just as I was excited they had an African-American captain on DS9. Well, he was a commander originally, but that to me felt like the right Star Trek thing to do. You know what? We'll forget these white guys. Like, let's actually, you know, let's put our money where our mouth is and like bank on an underrepresented class of people. Sure. But the thing that bugged me immediately about seeing Voyager was the bridge. There's no captain's chair. There's the chair that she sits in, and then her co-captain is right next to her.
Right.
Like there's no central point where she's the boss, which every other starship had.
And I never thought about that. Wow, you're right.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean that's interesting, and I think you could say, well, like in the Next Generation, they had a three seat situation, right?
Yeah,
with Riker and Troy.
Yeah, and he was in the middle.
He was in the middle, yes. Yeah. And
on the original series, he's basically got
a chair. Yeah,
he's just got a throne. He's right up there in the middle on a big pedestal,
and he's
clearly the boss, you know. And this was like, oh, well, we've got a boss, but we've also got a co-boss. Chakotay.
Yeah, a result of how they came to be a crew to begin with. But I guess, you know, but they didn't redesign the ship. So the ship had those two chairs, even when they had white guys. They did kill off a lot of white guys in the pilot, by the way.
That is true. Yeah, I know. Was it last week, the week before? You covered the pilot. Watched it then too.
Yeah.
I watch way too much Star Trek. I mean, like, it's seeping into everything I do.
But I mean, it's interesting. Like, I never thought about that before. It's an excellent point, Guy. Thanks for bringing it to our attention.
Now, I don't know if that's intentional. Like, well, let's soften the woman being a captain thing by hedging our bets. Or if it's like, you know what? We want a more egalitarian crew in general, so we'll organize it like this. Or we know we want the Maquis guy coming in, so we want to set up
the two of them together.
Like a little bit of a struggle for power initially. I mean, both of them generally agree, but they're both mature leader type people, and they can be like, well, here's – which I admired actually. But a bit of the setup for the show is that there's going to be tension between the Maquis people and the Starfleet people, right? So maybe that's why they gave them two chairs. I don't know what the rationale behind it was, but it always struck me as a bit of a hedged bet.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So did you watch the first season, or you get?
I watched
the
first
chair
season,
thing was too much.
No. So it's Star Trek. Come on. I kept watching it, but I mean, I forget what I was doing in my life at the time. It was at university, I believe. I forget what was going on, but basically, I just didn't have time, and I didn't call to me. None of the characters particularly called to me. And I sort of wrote it off, and I would pop in every now and then and enjoy an episode, or I'd find it cheesy. Oh, I liked Kes, but I hated Neelix.
Yeah.
I liked Kes because she was interesting. Like, she had all these weird, crazy powers, but they never really did anything with it, which was a bit of a letdown. I liked the Maquis. I mean, I'm sure people have told you this before. The Maquis Federation tension was interesting, but again, they didn't play with it. I know you're fine with that, and I actually kind of like your take on that. People should just get along. And DS9 had a lot of the tension going on.
I mean, it's hard to imagine. So I wasn't watching any of this stuff when it was first aired. it's hard for me to imagine watching two Star Trek series like on a weekly basis, like back when it was appointment television, like you had to go watch it. Or, I mean, right. You could theoretically record it, but it's not like it is today where you could just binge watch an entire season.
Right. Yeah. If I could have got it online, I'm sure I would have watched it. But it was like, look, I'd go over to my friend's house and we'd make an occasion out of it and whatever. Like Voyager was not there. My kind of heart out, to be honest, was when they introduced Seven of Nine. I felt like I was being patronized.
Yes.
Like, because I was, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on with the ratings. I didn't pay attention, certainly in that time, to that kind of thing. And I hadn't seen it in a while. And then, but they were going to introduce the Borg. And I'm like, well, okay, I do love the Borg. So I tuned in for the Borg, and Seven of Nine joins the cast. And she's great. She's a great actor. What's her name? Jerry.
Ryan.
Jerry Ryan. That's yeah. It. She's great. She does a great job. But they put her in a cat suit.
Yeah.
And I just felt like Star Trek is a show about like that is supposed to engage my intellect.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, there's a few fights and laser beams go off every now and then. And, like, there's action and adventure. But ultimately, it's about engaging my intellect. And I felt that this was a move designed to try to draw me in as I'm a straight white guy. So straight white guy. I'm a straight dude. I mean, cis guy. And it just felt like, hey, look, you're pandering to me.
Right.
And that's insulting. Like, I don't want that. So I basically just gave up. I didn't come back to it.
That's interesting.
I watch every now and then, but ultimately it was more of a turnoff than a sort of enticement. Yeah,
so their plan did not work on you.
Not until Scott started doing Random Trek and his diversity of guests, including like yourself and our friend Bianna Wu and others, sung the praises of Voyager. And the strength of the Seven of Nine character and Janeway herself. I never had a problem with Janeway. I just the rest seemed a little bit wishy-washy. So I went back and I started watching it. Like I said, I took your hit list. And then it was just like, you know what? I'm going to watch the whole thing. And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah.
Seven of Nine, it turns out, is an excellent character.
Right. Despite the cat suit.
It is a disservice to put her in that costume, to be honest. But, you know.
Yes. It's annoying.
I don't
know
why I couldn't have just given her a uniform at some
point. Right. Well, you know, I feel that way about Troy as well.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
I think season 7, they finally gave
Gave her a uniform. And she looked good in the uniform. And
she looked great in a uniform. She looks better than the other way.
Yeah. The other thing was like.
She's professional and competent. And like, she's a counselor. She has a rank.
Yeah. As opposed to like, she looked like a glorified yoga instructor. And nothing against yoga instructors. Just that why did she have to have this outfit that was very yoga friendly?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. It othered her.
Yes.
On a bridge full of incredibly competent people, of which she was one, the lack of a uniform made her the other.
Yeah.
And made it seem like she couldn't take command. And there's an excellent episode where she's taken the command test.
Right. Yeah, that is one of my favorites.
It's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
They still don't give her enough to do.
Neither
Beverly. And that shows very – you know, they kind of have – the women are a little bit potted plants on that show.
Yes. No, I agree. I mean, I like TNG. I like the characters.
Yeah, me too.
I like – but, you know, if you make somebody the doctor, you know, and she's a woman, she's slotted into – and then the other person who is a therapist, like, so the healers are going to be women. That puts them, you know, to the side of what is the meat of the show, which is space and travel and engineering
adventure, and
the ship.
One of the things I like about your enjoyment and Brianna's enjoyment of this is that this was a Star Trek that gave you something.
Yeah.
And that's part of why I love Star Trek. Even if I don't enjoy this show as much as some of the other shows, the fact that it can give other people something of value
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. I think it's really, really great.
Yeah. I mean, Star Trek, we love it. What can we say? Yeah,
pretty much.
We can pick it apart, you know, because we're fans, but we would never say that it's just not worth watching because it's awesome. And Voyager, so the episode that we're talking about today is called Endgame. It is the finale of the Voyager series, which I got interested in talking about it with you because you were just on an incomparable episode that was a draft of the favorite and least favorite TV series endings. And you chose Deep Space Nine as your favorite ending, which I thought, you know, is really interesting and a good ending. Yeah. I was actually surprised how much Star Trek, you know, was mentioned in that show. I didn't want to be on the show because I was like, I don't watch a lot of TV, but turns out Star Trek, you know, you can always go somewhere with Star Trek.
So the story behind that is I had like serious shows. I had The Wire, I had Mad Men, I had a bunch of other stuff. And for some reason, Star Trek came up. And I knew either Dan Warren or myself were going to pick it. So behind the scenes, I'm like, texted him like, should one of us pick it? And he let me have it because he had another pick. So I picked it. It's not necessarily my favorite ending, but I think it's a great ending.
It does what an ending should do.
Yes.
You know? And right. And I think people like that ending in general. But then there was another discussion of bad Star Trek endings. Definitely the last episode of the original series, not good.
Doesn't even end.
Wasn't an end.
Just,
yeah.
Crappy.
I mean, the show
just
got canceled.
It's like, yeah. Hey, you know what? You're canceled.
Yeah. But you had sort of vaguely like alluded to Voyager as having an ending worth. You know, it's certainly not a bad ending. It's not one of the bad endings. Maybe not the best ending. And that just made me think, yeah, I want to talk about the ending, even though we're very much at the beginning of this podcast. And folks, if you are listening and you have not watched everything in Voyager, and we're going to talk about the end, spoiler alert, just for your... I think, you know, our audience is mostly people who have already watched everything or have watched most of it and probably know that somehow the crew of Voyager will get back to the Alpha Quadrant. But
the other thing is, if you're just starting out, you will forget by the time you get there because there's a lot to go.
There's a lot to between now and then. Yep, that's true. So, you know, so let's talk about... Endgame, which is the final final episode of the entire series. And it was interesting, you know, because it was a 7-season show and they had apparently, you know, I looked this up. They had 9 other almost got home stories. The ones I called the Gilligan's Island type episodes.
Yeah, that was a bit of a trope.
So wormholes that didn't work out or, you know, alien technology that turned out to be fake. And
they had Harry Kim save them at one point.
Oh, except, yeah.
Oh, that no, one everybody was good. Died or they crashed on a planet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, time travel is also all over Voyager. And that's what made me also think, oh, it would be interesting to talk about this because this episode features time travel in a big way. And also, you know, it's called Endgame and it has nothing to do with the Avengers or vice versa. But there is that issue of time travel that people can't stop. And we just had, you know, a whole season of Star Trek Discovery where time travel had a big role. And I feel like, you know, that's always an interesting way to handle stuff. I remember watching this and feeling like, well, it wasn't the greatest, you know, like years ago, but rewatching it for talking to you, I thought, oh, this is actually better than I remember. What did you think?
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I was like, what? It sort of annoyed me. but I watched it again last night, and I like it a lot. I think they made some very smart choices.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have to – it's a long episode. It's a double episode.
It is a double episode, yeah.
Future – Janeway – they get back.
Yeah.
Janeway goes back in time. Janeway is unsatisfied with the price that they paid to be in the – arrive home. So she goes back in time to meet the Voyager years ago, 23 years ago, something like that.
Well,
and try to give them a shortcut and so that her – so that more of the crew survives into the future. That's the basic premise. The thing I like about that setup, and that's not even too spoilery, so maybe that's okay. But the thing I like about that setup is we get to see where the characters go, which is a nice way to end things. Next Generation sort of did something similar, right? Like we see Picard in the farm and Geordi older and
Data is at Cambridge.
And that's a nice way. Star Trek has the tool of time travel to be able to show us, like, you know what, here's how all of these characters wind up. Now let's go back and wrap up the series. And I thought Voyager was very, very smart to take a page out of that book and give us the older Janeway and how we see things, at the time. Like the Doctor's getting married.
That's one of the best little twists.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite character.
He's pretty awesome. And I do just love that little bit at the beginning where his new wife, you know, who's young and it's not a hologram, but she says like, oh, Joe is romantic. And Paris, who they're talking to, is like, Joe? It took you 33 years to come up with Joe because the Doctor – trying to pick a name has been, you know, a story throughout.
So I'm glad they closed that off. That was cool. B'Elanna and Paris. Tom Paris. Thank you. They have a daughter.
Yes.
Which we knew previously, or she was pregnant at least previously.
She was pregnant.
And throughout the course of this episode, she's in labor and she gives birth right at the end. I liked that. I liked that there's a nice, it's the ending, but it's the beginning of something new. Sort of notion. There's the fact that it's a woman giving birth on the show is very much about women. I like that. There's a lot of subtext and a lot of notions about this that I really, really enjoyed. I don't like the notion of the Borg Queen. Or how in depth they got into the Borg per se.
Yeah.
But the Borg Queen is not their fault. That comes from whatever it's called, First Contact.
First Contact, yeah.
And while I kind of always enjoyed the notion of the Borg as more of a force of nature, the show did do interesting things about it. Like if I can disassociate myself from what I would like them to be and actually attach to what they did with them, I thought that was interesting. Like the inner life of a Borg is explored.
Yes.
And that's kind of cool. And we see that through Seven of Nine, who, again, is a great character. And through her eyes, we get to experience that kind of thing. And her,
she has a lot of really interesting, you know, sort of flashback type episodes as well. Like there's the one where, you know, there's these three other former Borg who find her because they were all on a mission together. And like, it's got this like, you know, like PTSD Borg, you know, question mark of like, what did Seven actually do that was so bad on that mission? I like that kind of story, or even the story of Seven's parents and, they were, you know, idealistic researchers.
Very, very bad choice.
Yes. Yes, they did.
But still, you know, whatever. You know. They meant well, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they thought they knew what they were doing and they weren't treating the Borg, you know, the way.
Well, I mean, they went swimming with like great whites and they got bit basically, which is, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But yeah, I think it's interesting that, as you say, like, you know, you see some wrap up of certain characters that you know, the Doctor or Paris and Torres and their daughter or Harry Kim, he's captain now, finally got promoted. But then there's the stories like Tuvok, who is, you know, lost his mind. And you don't totally understand why this is relevant until you get into the flashbacks. And I really thought the flashbacks, they weren't even flashbacks, right? Because this episode is about what's happening in real time to Voyager when not old Admiral Janeway, but, you know, current Captain Janeway, you know, they're in their seventh year and they bypass a nebula because there's Borg in it. And Admiral Janeway wants them to go back and check it out because that could get them home a lot faster. So, like how they brought in, you know, the different timelines together, that I thought was really well done.
I thought it was it's a very clever narrative device. Mm-hmm. And one that's really only open to, you know, Star Trek or some kind of show that has time travel. Otherwise, you have to have a flashback, right?
Right.
But this flashback, like she, I enjoyed the conversations between Admiral Janeway and Captain Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
They are different characters.
Yes, they are.
You know, marked by age and experience, and I thought that was great. I thought it was very well done. I thought it was a considered use of the character and where she. Projecting from where she was after 7 years, where would she be after 30, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, according to the original timeline that we're told from the beginning is that it took Voyager 23 years to return to the Alpha Quadrant instead of the 7, you know, that it ends up, you know, wrapping up with. And 23 years is a even though initially it was right. predicted to be 70 years, it was 23 years is a long time to spend with the same 120 plus people.
It is a very, very long time. Yeah. It was like, what, 79 originally, something like that? And they got it down to 23. That is a remarkable victory. Like, if there's a problem I have with this episode, is that, like, you know what, Admiral, don't gamble it. That is amazing that you got this, you know. Yes, you lost some people that you love, but holy cow, that is a real victory.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to know all the various stories that led to them shaving off so much time. I mean, they had already done a few things, you know, throughout the series that, like, Kes, you know, mentally pushing them forward, I don't know, 10,000 light years or whatever, but... Yeah. It was a long time and it made sense that Admiral Janeway, if she had a way to do something about it, would say, you know, I want to subtract those 16 years or whatever. So
yeah, keep optimizing.
Keep optimizing. do you remember the episode with the two Janeways? It's one of my favorite episodes, and for some reason I always draw a blank on the title, where the ship divides into two phases, and there's two crews, and it's in season two. Anyway, it's always interesting when you have two Janeways.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway.
Is one good and one bad? Or are they both?
No, they're just one ship is really being hammered. And it's like falling apart and people are dying, like Harry Kim dies, you know, and Naomi Wildman baby dies. And then
you can't have that.
No, you cannot kill the babies.
Harry Kim. Naomi Wildman. No.
So, so they, you know, basically there's one, you know, they figure out that one Voyager is actually destroying the other Voyager by trying to, you know, fix whatever's going on with their warp core. And so they're like, all right, how do we get back together? Anyway, but it's two Janeways. You know, it's not like fancy, you know, special effects or anything. It's the classic, like, you know, TV, two people talking, you know, split screen basically talking to each other. But the idea of two Janeways is interesting. And in this finale, it's even more interesting because one is, I guess, 33 years older than the other.
Yeah.
So.
Still looking great, though.
Yeah. Not too shabby. Yeah. Yeah, I think that what I ask myself is, well, what would it take for this to be? Like, what would be my ideal ending of Voyager? And I couldn't really think of anything,
yeah,
you know,
me too.
Completely. It may be like, you know, as you say, like the Borg stuff is kind of tacked on and not quite integrated. But the idea, I mean, it just wouldn't have worked for the show to end with Voyager like, oh, there's a wormhole. Let's like go through it. And they finally get through. You know, that's Gilligan's Island, even if they get home, you know, so.
So the resolution of the characters, I think, is great. I there's bits I don't like. That, like, I think this episode lets me down a little bit because this is a good ending to some characters I kind of don't care about. And it's the joke is that there's animosity, but there's no animosity. But like when Harry Kim says he gives a big speech, which basically ends up being maybe the point is the journey.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's such a trite observation.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a bit of a letdown, you know? Like, I think I speak for everybody when I was, it's like. What?
Since when has Harry Kim spoken for everybody?
Well, yeah, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not, here's the thing, it's not a compelling thought.
No.
If Harry Kim had said, I've always wanted to go home. You're the captain. I have complete faith in you. Let's go do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been more interesting than like, hey, maybe the point is the journey, which is just, it feels a little trite. I did like Tom Paris. I liked him originally, and then he really grated on me. Then he started doing fun stuff in the Holosuite.
Yeah. Captain
Proton. Like, you know what? He's okay. He's definitely grew on me. And to be honest, I softened on Tom Paris when B'Elanna did.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? If she thinks you're okay, fine. You're okay with me, I guess. And he was okay with the end. Like, that was cool. Like, the way he's all, you know, she's in labor and he's stressed, but he also, you know, he's got a job to do kind of thing.
Yeah.
I thought B'Elanna had a good – she had a good arc. Like,
yeah.
TNG didn't really do much arc. Maybe Data, maybe. Mm-hmm. Worf, probably. I can't really think of any like serious character changes. Troy, by accident, by basically into putting on a uniform and getting command stuff, you know. But I don't think that was so much of an arc, so much as correcting a huge mistake they made early on. So DS9 characters had more of an arc, but Voyager actually did arc some characters in mm-hmm. meaningful ways, which I appreciated.
Certainly. Like, definitely. I like the Torres and Paris, like, storyline. And I'm with you. Like, oh, my God, watching the pilot and watching Paris and that, I was like, ugh. I would have never said he was one of my favorite characters. I
like the notion of a cocky flyboy in the pilot. But by the end of the pilot, I was like, okay, I've stopped caring.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so creepy, literally, you know, and but they get rid of that pretty quickly. Certainly, you know, by season two, first of all, he's less important, you know, which I think is important because
I think they set him up to be sort of a star of the show or like the Riker style swashbuckling ladies man kind of guy.
Right.
And it didn't really work.
Yeah.
And
it would have been interesting. Glad. You know, I mean, he was supposed to be his character from TNG.
Yeah, I know. That's a bit of a shame.
And as I understand it, they changed their minds about making him the actual character from TNG because he, I mean, it would mean paying royalties to writers from TNG.
Right. That's a crime.
It's
like, that is, Yeah. This is so clearly that character from the TNG thing that he and Wesley did that fancy starburst, whatever it was, and he ended up in the brig, basically.
Yeah, it would have been way more interesting.
Turns out the brig for Starfleet is a really nice planet where you, I don't know what, you pick up garbage or something.
Yeah, like I think you go to, well, yeah, I don't know, and you get to go to Australia and hang out, and it's like working for Habitat for Humanity or something.
Yeah, it's not that bad, you know.
But yeah, so it would have been interesting. I mean, I always sort of think of him like that Locarno character, I think is his name.
I do. In my mind, he's Locarno.
He's
That's
still
it.
That guy. So he's way better than he was in TNG.
Yes, definitely. And which is, I guess, that's an arc if we take him as the same person. But you know what? Pay writers. They work hard. Yeah. Don't make stupid. Like, come on.
No, that's – yeah. That's
so cheap. But
so
anyway,
cheesy. Yeah.
I mean, that's what? A decision 25 years ago.
Yeah. Nah, it's true. And then I do like those two characters and their arc. I like everybody loves the Doctor, right? I mean,
yeah, he's got it. I mean, he becomes a real man. He's like
he does.
Yeah. Yeah. So initially the Doctor annoyed me a little bit because it's like every ship in Starfleet needs, or in Star Trek shows, needs one of these. It was Spock, then it was Data, then it was the Doctor. Mm-hmm. I don't know on Discovery. Maybe Saru, but
yeah.
Robert Picardo is such a charismatic man.
Yeah.
The character is so full of life that even when he was annoying me, like, I don't really want to watch you sing opera, but you seem to be having a really good time.
Cool. I do like opera, so I like the opera parts. But I thought it was interesting. So we did an episode a couple back with me and James Dempsey to just focus on the Doctor. And James made the point, like, how good is Robert Picardo as an actor? Because he's like, he can like carry off this like snarky, conceited, you know, character who you still end up liking and enjoy watching and are not annoyed by. I mean, a little annoyed maybe in the beginning, as you say.
Well, his charm, like, there's something about it. He's charismatic, right? Like, it overcomes you. You know that he's being annoying, but while he's being annoying, he's being helpful, which is the classic onery doctor kind of thing. I mean, Bones was basically kind of a jerk most of the time. Like, he was always giving the captain grief or Spock, like the two characters, you know, that you're sort of predisposed to love. And Bones would just be mean to them. But
that's true. Yeah. So, well, I think we can't call him the Doctor anymore. I guess we call him Joe. but yeah, and there were quite a few characters that needed resolutions that they just handled like off stage with Chakotay and Seven and even Tuvok, you know, that he would have this brain disease that, you know, could have been cured if they had gotten back to the Alpha Quadrant sooner.
Right.
So
and he was basically Janeway's best friend, right?
Yes.
Like they'd served previously
previously. Like, if there hadn't been the whole Maquis thing, the whole reason she was on this mission to get the Maquis ship is that Tuvok was on it.
Right.
Undercover. If there was one thing you would change in this episode, then that would make it like more to your liking, what would it be, Guy?
That's a fascinating question. I tend not to think like that because I either like it or not. I people who want to rewrite movies and like are raising money for that is
raising money.
Stop doing that. Stop.
No.
Nobody's going to remake The Last Jedi because you made some money. It's not going to happen. You're going to do a worse job. Stop. And in that line, I feel like, you know, whatever. It is what it is, and they made what they did, and they know better than I.
Yeah.
What I would change is maybe given that we have a Borg Queen, I think the showdown between the Borg Queen and Janeway is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I think two very strong, powerful women facing off is an appropriate ending to Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanisms of how they did that, I think I would have preferred to be tweaked a little bit to be less massive scale. Like, we're going to blow up this thing that will cripple the Borg forever and ever.
Right.
Well, maybe not forever and ever. But you know what I mean?
It's like the next time.
All of these wormholes that go all over the place instantly,
yeah.
We have a chance to take them out. It feels like too final. I would have liked a more personal ending for characters that I feel had personal stakes.
Yeah.
That said, TNG ended with like everything in the universe is not going to exist anymore. So maybe, which I also had a problem with, by the way. Like you know, that's again a little bit too grandiose. But at least it's Q, and you can kind of be like, okay, well, he is,
yeah,
whatever. You know, that's sort of why I like the ending of Deep Space Nine. It was basically culmination of a massive war. And Sisko goes from being, I don't want to say, like, not an atheist, but like he is
a skeptic,
a man of science, to having faith.
Mm-hmm.
In not that he thinks that these the power race or the prophets are gods, but he has faith that they have seen the span of time and mm-hmm. they have a plan. Which is not the same as being a god, but from his perspective as a corporeal entity,
mm-hmm.
it's a big leap for him to make. I mean, he literally leaps off a cliff, but like it's an interesting arc for the character, and I thought that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the problem with a time travel story that where you change the past gives you a, well, now what, you know, like, I never really liked those shows. So this is one of them, the one with Harry Kim and Chakotay saving Voyager, you know, from the future. Is like the characters, you know, they have this motivation to make something happen, but their outcome is going to be they don't exist, you know.
Right.
And so the stakes get lowered. I don't know. So.
Yeah. I mean, Admiral Janeway does exactly that, right?
Yeah.
And
so, I mean, I did enjoy seeing Admiral Janeway. I enjoyed, you know, so I think, like you say, like, what are you going to do? It's the show that they made. I'm not doing a crowdfunding, you know, for redoing the ending of Voyager.
Unless, do you know what? If we had a time machine, we could go back and get them to fix it. So maybe crowdfund the time machine.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Then you can fix a lot of things. It's exactly. Much more.
Yeah, believe me, this would be the last thing I bother fixing. There's better stuff to fix. Over the past 25 years, sure I've got more interesting stuff to fix.
Yeah, it's not all on TV. But anyway, so
wait, one thing I did want to mention is that Admiral Janeway is an incredibly it's a dark character
mm-hmm.
and one that I didn't feel got explored enough because. She sees the doctor being happy and getting married. She sees many of her friends living long, happy, and healthy lives.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes a decision to go back and change it, which is – it erases her. Mm-hmm. But it also erases everybody else,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of dark.
Yeah, it's kind of got that in common with Avengers Endgame, which is like what are you going to change, you know? What can you change some things and not change the others? But I guess the you know, assumption is the people who were together will stay together, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's right. The assumption is that the good things will continue to happen, but now they'll be more people.
Yeah, fixed for, you know, they won't lose Seven, they won't lose.
Yeah,
well, I don't know.
But I do think that's a bit of a roll of the dice. So.
Yeah, it is. As they should know from Year of Hell, but
yeah, which is a great episode. That's just a really good Star Trek episode. Point finale.
Yes.
It doesn't matter which one of them you're talking about.
I know, and that one, it's like, are you kidding me? How many times are you going to roll the dice on this time, you know, machine? Because it just doesn't work that way. But
that said, foibles or whatever, mild complaints about. The mechanics of time travel and what that means for the characters. The use of time travel in this story, I think, is appropriate, and it serves the characters well, and it allows us to see their future and how they got there, how they finally
mm-hmm.
escaped the Delta Quadrant and got home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two fireworks. It opens with fireworks, which I thought was great. I really did. I liked that a lot.
I did too. Like, and yeah, it's definitely a funny feeling, like, because it, you think, is this it? Like, they just got home and they didn't even show us how they got there.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, Voyager, which is mostly pretty straightforward. It was definitely like interesting framing. You know, first the fireworks, then you realize it's a newscast. Then you realize it's Janeway watching a newscast. And she's like, turn that, you know, computer, turn the display off. The final line of this show is set a course for home, I think.
Yeah.
And that is the final line of the pilot as well. So,
yeah.
I think that's
great.
Nice touch.
I really, really like that. And this time they've got the whole fleet.
Oh them. My God! They like have the whole fleet. Yeah.
I'm like, that's great. I love it.
It's pretty nice.
For once, there wasn't only one ship in the quadrant. There was like, oh, look, we've actually got 18 of these things.
Right.
Finally, somebody's like defending Earth. I think that's wise too.
And also to see all the, you know, a fleet like that, and there's no war going on where they're half of them are getting blown up. Like, they're just all just headed towards Earth.
They just blow the crap out of that sphere.
Yes.
Problem solved.
Yeah, that's true.
What? I didn't really follow that. Voyager shoots at the sphere and then it blows up. Like, what? Yeah.
They had...
special torpedoes? Is that
they had some... Oh, yeah. They had special torpedoes that Janeway... Future Janeway brought. Yeah, that's what it was. Because...
I think that gets dropped on the floor. Because,
yeah.
I think they're like, hey, we're just going to ignore that stuff.
Yeah.
The next movies don't have that. So.
No, and especially the whole notion that Janeway, Admiral Janeway, has all this technology, anti-Borg technology that we don't know how they developed. Yeah. You know, if she's been
like
in the Alpha.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, let's not look too closely. I like the armor. It's Star Trek.
It looked cool.
Her
shuttle got like spikier and like more like a sports car. Yeah. Fine.
I liked it when they were getting shot at and Tuvok would say, you know, shields down, 7%, not 40%, you know, whatever. I'm like, ooh, you know, it's almost like being in a video game and you got leveled up.
Right. Yeah. Your character starts blinking.
Oh, my. Well, Guy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about this episode with me. I just, and about Star Trek in general, this just makes me want to sit down and binge watch an entire series, maybe Deep Space Nine. It's been a while, so.
Yeah. Oh, that one's hard.
Yeah, it is.
Not quite as fun, you know.
No.
Well, it's you know what I it's probably one of my I think it's here's my thing I think it is the best made series in terms of the writing and production quality and the narrative arcs. That does not mean that it should be anybody's favorite. Like, people have their own favorites and the what's close to their heart. And I really enjoy that your favorite is Voyager, and it has made me enjoy it more. So thank you for
cool.
that.
Well, thanks, Guy, and thanks to the listeners for being here. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. And also you can follow us on Twitter and micro.blog at voyager_cast. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest to discuss more Star Trek Voyager. So until then, time's up.